And tell them about the Personal Computer Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Okay.
All right. And the previous program was The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. You can listen to that program every Tuesday and Wednesday starting at 1 p.m. here on WBAI. Now stay tuned for Women in the Baking, hosted by Desi K. Robinson. And once again, this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned.
Life is never easy. The rest is unknown. And up to now, for me, it's been hands against stone.
Women in the Making, Tomorrow's History Today, where we highlight the views, perspective, questions, goals, and accomplishments of today's girl. I'm your host, Desi K. Robinson, and today we're talking about overcoming obstacles. As we watch the headlines and we see young people, particularly young people of color, in turbulent relationships with the police and young unarmed men dying, much of the Occupy Wall Street movement was led by youth who were disillusioned and saddled with debt. And so for so many, adolescence is really a time to be hopeful and to see the world as your oyster. And as you position yourself for achieving the American dream, we have, you know, bright eyes and much optimism. But what happens is we are now seeing so many of our young people get derailed, and they're playing an endless game of catch up, or they don't even have the wherewithal to catch up. They're just trying to survive. And so today, we're talking to some young women in the making who are going to share their stories of challenge and triumph, and how our communities can address some of the issues and help circumvent some of these issues. And so today, I'm on location at the Kingsborough Community College campus, and we're joined by members of Project Rise. Project Rise is a GED program at Kingsborough Community College here on the campus, and that campus is part of the CUNY system, and the program is enhanced with comprehensive college and work readiness. And so our women in the making are here, and I'd like them to introduce themselves, please.
Hi, my name is Maxine Jackson.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Erica Glenn.
And throughout history, we have heroes, but here at Women in the Making, we have sheroes. And today, I welcome my shero, Dina Lamandry. She's the Associate Director of Project Rise and an all-around dynamo. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you. And so I'd actually like to start with you, Dina. Tell us a bit about Project Rise and why the program is so important to late adolescent and young adult population here in New York City.
Project Rise basically meets the needs of young adults between the ages of 18 and 24 years old living in the five boroughs who've been out of the loop. They haven't been in school, they haven't been in work, they've not been connected to a network of, you know, a supportive environment that maybe advances either of those things, and it can be for any number of reasons. Most people think it's lack of motivation, but more often than not, it's barriers.
Mm-hmm.
Poverty, becoming a young parent, not having a stable living environment, not having a stable home environment, even if you have a place to live. And so our program addresses the other components, which are get an education, get some work experience, get some support while you're doing both.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what Project Rise is. While a young person is getting their high school equivalency, they're also getting a paid internship. So they're earning some money, they're getting some experience. We'll help place them in work and place them in college. We'll prepare them for all of it through training and workshops and seminars. The program's incentivized because when life throws you those challenges, it's hard to stay on track.
Right.
Many of our young people lack intrinsic motivation, that thing that's inside of you. And so we plant that seed and fertilize it through the course of the year.
Or sometimes it's sapped, you know, out of you. You know, many young people are hopeful, and all it takes is a couple of things, traumatic things, to happen in someone's life to get derailed and to be sapped of that hope.
Absolutely. And we've seen people come in with tons of hope and something happen, and then they're, you know, it's that much harder.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen people come in with little hope, or really worried and nervous and scared and angry and defensive,
mm-hmm.
and then that change because they realize there are opportunities. But our program's a year long, and that's what makes it unique from other programs,
mm-hmm.
other GED/TASC programs, because we have time to grow with the young person. It's not an in and out sort of thing. It's let's grow together over the course of the year. We also have program counselors, which are like enhanced high school guidance counselors.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can ask the young women, that relationship with their program counselors and the team, that support network is something that they get when they come into the program while they're here, and it doesn't go away. And it could be the thing that means success.
Right, right. Support. I mean, and that's
right.
Really kind of what we're talking about. Support in myriad ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to talk a little bit more deeply about some of those components that exist within the Project Rise program. But right now, I actually want to throw it to the young ladies here. And I think I want to start with Maxine. You are an alum, right?
Yes.
Yes. And so tell us about some of those challenges that led you to being derailed. What? Tell me what happened.
Before coming to Project Rise.
Before coming to Project Rise.
Well, I became a single mom at the age of 14. I dropped out of high school. There was a lot going on at home, and it was just unbearable.
Mm-hmm.
No support at all. No one to talk to. I had a breakdown.
Physical, emotional?
Emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
I didn't have it there anymore.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to muster that up at 14.
It is.
Yeah. Erica, what's been going on in your life? What happened before Project Rise?
Before Project Rise, I was just a regular high school student,
mm-hmm.
who was dealing with stuff with their mom and going through something I didn't know at the time was depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I was almost to the door of graduating on my senior year. And then I met a guy who I thought changed my life. But as I grew to understand, I knew he hurt me more than I could ever hurt myself. He pulled me out of high school. He didn't want me to go back. He impregnated me to the point where I thought we would be a family. And he's telling me these lies. And when my daughter was born, he left me alone, knowing that my mother still has problems with me, knowing that I can't fully be compassionate to her because she's never fully been compassionate with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurt to the point where I had a breakdown and I just gave up on myself to the point where I didn't want to do anything. And I went to other GED programs and I took the GED test before coming here and I gave up every time because I didn't pass.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw an ad randomly. I'm just sitting there with my daughter just going through a Kingsborough pamphlet and I'm like, what is this Project Rise? And I called him the very same day when I saw. I was like, can you please call me back about more information?
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I said, my life's got to change. This has to be for the better. It has to be for me because no man is worth trying to put me down.
I love that. I love that. And so on that note, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Women in the Making on WBAI. We're here every second Wednesday at 2 p.m. And you can continue to follow us at Facebook on facebook.com/DesiKWim. I'm on Twitter. You can find me on Google. I'm Googleable. That's what I always say. Desi K. Robinson. I'm also on Instagram at Desi_K. It's so hard to keep track of all the handles. And you can get more information about the program and about our young ladies on my fan page. We also have a great trivia prize for you guys. And so we're going to read a question and have you guys win a trivia prize. Whoever is the first to correctly answer the question and post it onto the Facebook page will win a prize. So when we come back, I want to talk about some of the learnings that you all were able to come to. It seems like there's such a full scope of what has to be learned emotionally, physically, academically, and you all already seem like you're understanding so much of what was a challenge for you and how you were vulnerable. And I appreciate you sharing that with us. And so when we come back from our break, I'd like you to dig a little deeper into that and be able to talk about some of the ways that you've been able to move away from some of those vulnerable areas. So you're listening to Women in the Making, Tomorrow's History Today on WBAI.
His mother goes to scrub the floors for many, and you best believe he hardly gets a penny.
You're here with me, Desi K. Robinson, on Women in the Making, Tomorrow's History Today on WBAI Radio at 99.5 FM and on the web at WBAI.org. Today we're introducing you to Project RISE, a comprehensive GED program on the Kingsborough Community College campus. Our Women in the Making are Maxine and Erica, and our Shiro is Project RISE Associate Director Dina Lamandri. And we are talking about overcoming obstacles. What are some of our young people saddled with today that is creating barriers for them, that where the time where they're supposed to be the happiest in their life and the most optimistic, they're experiencing great trials and having a really difficult time, you know, just getting through. And so, Dina, we talked a little bit before about what some of those obstacles are. I think that, you know, when you think about what's happening with so many young people today, even, you know, our middle class is dwindling. And so we can only imagine what's happening to people who have not even achieved a middle class existence. And so we're looking at people who have not even been able to move out of their homes and people who have had to move back home, you know, people with college degrees who have had major struggles. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking with young ladies today who have been derailed, you know, even earlier in their lives. And so, you know, Erica, you talked about, you touched on something I thought was really interesting when you talked about your relationship with your mother and your relationship with your child and how that relationship with your partner at the time, you know, muddied some of that for you. And so I think that's really mature of you to even understand how that relationship created a barrier for you to have relationships even with your mother and your child. Can you talk a little bit more about why you think you were able to let him into your life at such a vulnerable time in your own life?
At the time, my mother and I weren't getting along, period, because I felt as if he was lying to me. And he actually admitted for 16 years he was lying to me, because I found out that he really wasn't my mother. And he told me that my mother died, and I felt as if he could explain that better. Mm-hmm. Instead of on my 16th birthday when I'm supposed to be becoming a woman and becoming more of responsibility. I'm supposed to handle this.
Mm-hmm.
With not only am I going to school, I have to handle the fact that I'm not your child and that everything that my other side of my family has told me, saying that that's not your mother, and I've been denying and putting you up, saying you are, and you've lied to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so horrible. And so I just moved away from her and I became something I did not like. Mm-hmm. I was more promiscuous in high school than I've ever wanted to be. I lost my virginity at 16, but I wanted to wait until I got married.
Mm-hmm.
I got raped at 17. And I was very vulnerable at the time. I didn't want nobody to touch me. My friends couldn't even talk to me. It got to a point where I would damage myself.
Mm-hmm.
I would put harm to myself, and then I would actually go on the internet looking for it. I feel back in high school, I was a sex addict,
mm-hmm.
and I hated that about myself, and I feel that I am still a sex addict, and I'm still going into it. And I would go online, and I found my partner that actually babe-fathered my child.
Mm-hmm.
And he made me feel safe. Even he was always telling me, I would never let anything happen to you. I will get you away from your mother.
So he was able to tap into some vulnerabilities that he was able to see within you. Maxine, I remember we talked earlier about some of the things that you wish had been available to you when you were a young person. Can both of you young ladies talk to me about the kinds of resources you think would have been helpful to you when you were having the issues that you were having?
Well, me, I just wanted my relationship with my family, my mom mainly, to go back to how it was from when I was the age of 9.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was used to the family gatherings on the weekends, you know, with the aunts and cousins and everything. We moved, you know, far from my family, so it was just us. And me and my mom just disconnected. She just went into, like, hibernation, I would say, and it was all about her and not about me and my brothers anymore, which is what led to me becoming a parent,
mm-hmm.
because I was looking for that support and the love elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So
it looks like, and you can chime in here, Dina, mm-hmm. it looks like what is happening with these young people is, I think, in these particular instances, there was some breakdown in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And so where does the support for the family come when the family is not able to be the nest that they need to be for these young people? Because what happens is they begin to have to parent themselves. And then, unfortunately, that funnels them into actually becoming parents mm-hmm. themselves. And so where do you, in your experience of working with creating support networks, what do you think would be sort of a viable way to create some support for families?
Well, you know, first I just want to say that how courageous I think you both are for sharing.
Absolutely.
With your sharing, because I know them both and I know them well, but just to hear this stuff firsthand is, even though I know you and you're accepted into the program,
it's unnerving.
You know, it's unnerving, and how courageous of you to be here and share this. But getting back to your question, Desi, one of the things we do in Project Rise, you know, they're adults when they come to us,
mm-hmm.
18 to 24. So family involvement is as much as they allow the young people who come.
Mm-hmm.
What we do in the very beginning is we have a meet and greet, and we ask them to invite the people that are important to them in their lives. So that we get to know.
Yeah.
And then I spend time, and my team spends time working the room and kind of telling everyone in the room, listen, this is going to be a hard program. We're going to have high expectations, and they're going to need your love and support. We're going to need you to be on top of them. We're going to need you to be there. And I sort of go around making that point, you know, kind of scolding a little, you know, and garnering. Please help us. We need your help to help them.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody comes to the meet and greet with family and friends because a lot of our young people are isolated. What do I see as a way to, you know, bridge that network? That has to happen from elementary school on. And it can't just be once, you know, twice a year parent-teacher nights.
Mm-hmm.
Schools have to think of creative ways to get parents interested. It has to be, you know, parent forums, support groups. You know, if you have to offer a prize to get people to show up, do it. That's
right.
Money well spent.
Right.
I'm all about incentives and rewards.
Mm-hmm.
If a child is struggling, reach out to the parent and ask, you know, what are you doing, but how can I help?
Right, how can you help? And I think that's really important, because mm-hmm. when I think about, I used to run an after school program, and there were various obstacles within that community. There were language barriers, mm-hmm. there were cultural barriers, there were a lot of parents that were not only illiterate in English, but in their native tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them did not feel empowered to help their kids with their homework, you know? I mean, and I would say, mm-hmm. look, let them teach you. That you not understanding the work shouldn't be a barrier to you demanding that they do it.
Right.
And I think oftentimes when parents feel disempowered, they begin to release some of the reins for many reasons. Mm-hmm. Guilt, you know, feeling overwhelmed themselves. And so mm-hmm. I would agree that I think early in the process of early childhood education, creating a network and a safety safe space for those parents to say, I need help. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. I don't understand the internet. I don't know what Facebook is about. I don't know what Twitter is. What is that? How do I, you know, talk to my kid about what this is?
There are high schools and elementary schools in California, these trial programs for children of immigrants from Mexico. And what the schools did, realizing there were so many literacy issues, not just, you know, from the family and both the parents. Parents are attaining their high school equivalency at the same time their children are in elementary or junior high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then this network is formed between parents and children and the school, and they're learning together and they're succeeding together. It's innovative. It's definitely not probably cost effective, but looking forward, these are the kinds of things we need to start to think about.
And the return on investment is much greater.
Absolutely. Now you have parents learning with their children and getting support. You're nipping problems in the bud before they happen.
Right.
It's not always that perfect, but it's definitely a start.
It's definitely a start. You talked about being a teen parent. Maxine, and what do you think were some of the issues that were around that, and what do you think could have helped prevent that?
Having more of a support system. Just living at home with my parents and not being able to speak with them about sex education, and mainly I see that it should be offered in school more.
Mm-hmm. More comprehensive.
To teenagers, mm-hmm. yes.
I would agree with you. I think that, you know, the jury is out for a lot of school systems about sex education, mm-hmm. abstinence, you know, versus even having, you know, sex education. I think abstinence is certainly part of teaching sex education, mm-hmm. but I think that, you know, we're moving in a better direction in terms of sex education and more comprehensive sex education. But I think that, and you can definitely chime in, Dina, I think that depression, feeling disempowered, oftentimes leads to early relationships that oftentimes leads to early parent or being a teen parent.
You know, when I think about sex education, usually the component that's missing is strong personal identity.
Mm-hmm.
Because many of these young women at 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 can tell you how not to have unprotected sex. They can probably tell you all different kinds of sex. They can tell you how to be safe, what diseases are.
Right.
But are they ever taught how to say no and still have respect?
Mm-hmm.
Are they ever taught the strength to stand up for what they really want to do and what they don't want to do?
And how to deal with the challenge of what that feels like to be a person that says, no, I don't want to do this.
Right, just
and
having knowing respect all that, yeah. for their bodies mm-hmm. and who they are, love for themselves. You know, that's the part of sex education that doesn't happen. So the how-tos, That's great, but probably most, if you gave a quiz to most 10-year-olds and asked them how to protect themselves, I bet you they'd 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Ask a young woman how to stand up for yourself, how to say no, how to love yourself and not need the love of somebody else to feel whole. that's another kind of education that's not happening.
Precisely. And when I say comprehensive, that's totally mm-hmm. what I mean. Like, we've got all the mechanics down, but, you know, talking about what it is to experience peer pressure mm-hmm. and to be able to say, that's not something I want to do, and know that that's going to be met with criticism. And how do you stand in your own truth and be authentic to how you feel and how you want to safeguard your own body and your own spirit around mm-hmm. that? You know, I think that those are tough conversations to have. And I think that's another instance in which we can support parents and families in how to do that. I think it's a hard conversation, I think, to have mm-hmm. about feelings.
Yeah.
How you talk about feelings. Talking about body parts is sometimes mm-hmm. a lot easier than talking about emotions and feelings and depression, which you mentioned, Erica. As an alum of the program, tell me some of the learnings that you've gotten, Maxine, from Project Rise.
A lot.
Give me a few.
Motivation.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of things happen within the program to give you motivation?
Well, for one, my counselor mm-hmm. and the whole Project Rise staff, they were always on me about what I wanted to do, my internship. I was always here, my attendance, everything was good, my work was great. They pushed me towards mm-hmm. my goal, basically, mm-hmm. to getting my GED. Communication, which is something I really didn't have because I'm big on trust, but I learned to open up more here, being with them. They welcomed me. You know, I felt like they were family.
Mm-hmm.
So it made it more easier for me to communicate my feelings, which gave me a clear mind, basically.
I love it. I want to talk with you, Erica, about being a current student and what are some of the things you're still working through. I know that you mentioned that you're still working through some levels of addiction that you're trying to, you know, get over and get through. And so when we come back, I want to talk with you about some of the highlights and some of the really great moments that you've been able to champion this far in the program. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Women in the Making, Tomorrow's History Today. Our music themes and our selections are all about empowerment, so enjoy listening to that. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM and on the web at WBAI.org. We'll be back.
Yeah. I asked a question like this. Are we a lost generation of our people? Add us to equations, but they'll never make us equal. She who writes the movie on the script and the sequel. So why ain't the stealing of my rights made illegal? They keep us underground, working hard for the greedy. But when it's time to pay, they turn around and call it needy. My crown too heavy like the Queen Nefertiti. Give me back my pyramid. I'm trying to free Kansas City. Mixing masterminds like your name, Bernie Grubbin. Well, I'ma keep leading like a young Harry Dubbin. You can take my wings, but I'm still gonna fly. And even when you edit me, the booty don't lie. Streets, cause I'm willing and I'm able. Categorize me, I defy every label. And while you're selling dope, we gon' keep selling hope. We rising up now, you gotta deal, you gotta cope. Will you be electric sheep, electric ladies? Will you sleep? Or will you preach?
Welcome back. You're listening to Women in the Making, Tomorrow's History Today. I'm your host, Desi K. Robinson. We're on WBAI 99.5 and on the web at WBAI.org. Again, if you have questions for me, you can contact me at facebook.com/DesiKWim. You can leave a comment or you can ask any questions you have of me or any of my guests. You can leave them on my fan page. Also, I want to thank all of our listeners and all of our givers and all of the folks who listen who have specifically given to Women in the Making. I do appreciate your gift and your commitment to keeping the voice of women and young women on the air. That's great stuff. We are on location at the Kingsborough Community College campus, and we are introducing you to Project Rise, which is a comprehensive GED program. And I have a couple of young ladies who are, one is an alum, Maxine, thank you for joining us, and the other is Erica, who's a current student. They've shared so many deeply personal things about what's going on in their lives and how they're working to move from challenge to triumph. And so I just want to thank them for, you know, sharing such deeply personal things that I know is happening in more lives than just theirs. And hopefully this will give us an opportunity to not only have other young people just think about how to connect or relate, but also about communities and about adults and about other people who can help circumvent some of these challenges that are happening in the lives of our young people. As I mentioned, we have seen recently in the news so many stories, too many stories, of young men of color dying at the hands of police, living in communities where the people who are supposed to protect them don't even make them feel safe. Young people who have managed to make it to college, who are saddled with debt, having a difficult time finding jobs. And so I wanted to do this show because I wanted to sort of talk about or have a conversation or dig into why our young people are not feeling or experiencing the optimism that they're supposed to be having at this young time in their life, a time when they're supposed to be feeling the most like the world is their oyster, and really, you know, getting derailed by one challenge, which will lead into the next challenge, which leads into the next challenge, which leads into the next challenge. And so, you know, Dina and I had a conversation a couple of days ago. We talked about privilege, and so even folks that experience privilege, and there are definitely some in our society that experience privilege to a greater degree than others, but even, you know, some that, like I said, who have had the opportunity to go to college, you know, are still saddled with debt, finding it difficult to find jobs. You know, what happens prior to that to young people who are living in communities where they don't have any support or they don't have the opportunity to even get out of high school? We're talking to two young ladies today who have experienced trauma so deep in their lives that they have not even been able to complete high school, which is the most basic of our sort of adult accomplishments. And so again, thank you so much for being able to share those stories with us. And I want you to talk a little bit about what's happening in your communities. Where are you guys coming from, and what other young people are experiencing these kinds of troubles? Because these issues that you talked about are not happening in a bubble. They're systemic of larger community issues. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's just when I was in high school, I wasn't the only one like me. Mm-hmm. There was a group of us. Like one of my old friends, Joanna, she was my best friend to the end when we were in high school. It was a competition between us who would finish first, mm-hmm. who would do something first. So it's like if I went out with somebody, she went out with two people at the same time.
Oh, why?
If I had an older guy, she had the oldest guy. Mm-hmm. If I got pregnant, she got pregnant with twins. And
who could have planned that?
You'd be surprised.
Okay, all right.
But it was like we were both insecure, but mm-hmm. we were insecure to the point where we would bring up each other. And we were like, we don't need these guys, and yet we would be the first one running to them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, now I don't talk to her because she's still in that mentality. Mm-hmm. And she actually got her GED before me. And she's like, well, you know, you need to get your GED so we can be out here and we do our thing. I was like, first of all, who are you to tell me I need to get something? I know what I need. I don't need you to tell me, okay? I get it from my mother. I get it from my grandmother. I get it from my entire family who still does not have faith in me.
So it was a peer pressure that was not working to your benefit.
Exactly. I had to leave her alone. Mm-hmm. And I'm just proud to say I haven't talked to her in about 3 years.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in East Flatbush.
In East Flatbush, okay.
I went to school in Bushwick and Bed-Stuy, though. Mm-hmm. Because my mother worked as a secretary in the Department of Education. Mm-hmm. Actually, she worked in Department 32 before it got closed down. Mm-hmm. And now she's in Region 4, where she can't really help me with anything because she used to talk to my teachers, talk to the principals, because they were all friends of hers, where she would try to help me out. But now, she's miserable, mm-hmm. and she feels like, you know what, I'm miserable. You're going to be miserable, too. I'm not going
to
help
you. So she just doesn't have it to give to you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Maxine, what community did you grow up in?
Staten Island.
Mm-hmm.
Staten Island.
What part of Staten Island?
And Clifton.
Mm-hmm. And what was going on in that community?
It's horrible. I still live there. Well, I grew up in two different sections, but mm-hmm. where I'm at now is horrible. The way I see things, you know, us being teenage mothers and raising kids now, I don't think we're given, well, most people are given the kids the attention they need. They're not being taught the right ways. That, you know, parents are, you know, getting high with their kids, and it's a lot that leads to the violence and, you know, all the happenings in the neighborhood. And I just don't think it's fair to everybody else there who's actually trying to make something of themselves mm-hmm. and, you know, have a better life for their children.
So some of these issues are prevalent throughout the communities that you live in.
Yes.
Yeah. But there are still some people within these communities that want to thrive and want to grow.
Right.
And well, what kinds of things do you think need to happen or need to change in those communities in order for not only the people who want to survive and do well, but can turn things around for the people that are having these challenges that just are misguided?
Well, like I said, it's just the parents themselves who allow these things, you know, their kids to come up a certain way, act a certain way, do these things. Because mm-hmm. in my neighborhood, we have police on beat, you know, they're there 24/7. Mm-hmm. But yet, you know, there's still a lot of fighting and, you know, drug use, it, you know, a lot going on in the neighborhood. I feel if, you know, more parents got out to support the effort of making change in the neighborhood for the better, we would have a better neighborhood. It would be clean and different.
So basically, it starts in the home.
It starts in the
yeah.
home, which is kind of what we talked about earlier in the first segment. Mm-hmm. We have to figure out, and I don't think it's going to happen within this hour, but we have to figure out how to empower communities so that they're not going through the cyclical poverty, drug infestation, poor relationships with police. You know, police are there too, and there are so many police officers that are really willing and engaged and want to create safe neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. You know, so many police officers come out of these neighborhoods that are challenged because they want to be the ones to be able to make a change because they know what goes on in their hood. Mm-hmm. You know, but for some reason it gets, that's another story, but their mission somehow gets distorted within the politics and also and the culture of, you know, policing our neighborhoods.
One of the things that, you know, many of the young people come to our program with an understandable dislike for people in uniform mm-hmm. Because of what they've experienced throughout their lives. So in the first week of orientation, we invite the campus public safety to the classroom.
That's awesome.
To meet with and connect with, not just meet and hear from them, because we ask the Kingsborough's public safety to in-service our students about, like, you know, campus rules, regulations, the things that could get them in trouble. Mm-hmm. But they do it in a sort of lighthearted, friendly way. And they say, if you see me, come say hi. If you need something, come and ask. If you, they make themselves, they're tenacious mm-hmm. and, you know, engaging, so different from what they might be used to otherwise.
Right.
And I do that on purpose, not only to enforce what campus rules and guidelines are, but also so that they look at someone in a uniform and not think, oh, they're
exactly.
staring at me, they're clocking me, they're this. It's about, oh, I know her, she's awesome. She helped me out that one day I lost my cell phone. You know, it's things like that. And when it comes to, you know, what Maxine just said, that there are cops on the beat in her neighborhood every day, that's great. But what else is happening? Mm-hmm. Why, you know, why aren't there youth programs?
Yeah, why aren't they engaged?
You know,
why aren't they doing ball handling clinics or, you know, they should be teaching CPR.
Absolutely. I mean, and, you know, meet people where they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you set up something in the community, people don't show up, then go right on the street where you see 10 kids hanging out and mm-hmm. walk right up to them and say, we're going to do this thing. Can I get one, two, or three of you to join us? And if you hit those three, it's a trickle effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's those small little changes that can have huge impacts.
It's true, in community development, I don't know how high it is on the list of, you know, policing our neighborhoods. But asset-based and community-based development is really what's going to turn, you know, these situations around, so that we're not continuing to see, you know, Ferguson and mm-hmm. what happened, you know, with Mr. Garner in Staten Island. I have another question for you, Dina. You mentioned, I believe that you mentioned that this is the only program of its kind in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's true, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so what, are there any plans for doing something like mm-hmm. this comprehensive program in other parts of the city?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you just trying to make this one float for a little while?
So there are two other Project Rise programs. There's one at the Henry Street Foundation,
mm-hmm.
and there's one at FEGS in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is one in Rutgers and one in Kansas City, Missouri. This is all part of the Social Innovations Fund.
Mm-hmm.
Our programs here in New York City are through the Mayor's Fund and the Center for Economic Opportunity. And it is a four-year grant-funded program, and now that year is coming to an end, and we're looking to continue the program because it's successful, because it works, and
mm-hmm.
because there's about 350,000 disconnected young adults in New York City.
That was actually going to be my next question.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it's a competitive program,
mm-hmm.
and that you have certain number of people apply, and you have a certain number of people that get accepted. And
mm-hmm.
so, what are those numbers like?
These are what those numbers are like. We can have anywhere from 200 to 700 young people apply any given recruitment time. And we accept 50 for the year, 25 each cohort.
Mm.
25 each cohort. And then they're with us for a year,
mm-hmm.
each of those cohorts. And they're provided that intense support and programming for a year on this campus, Kingsborough. Kingsborough partners with the Center for Economic Workforce and Development, which is a department here on campus.
Mm-hmm.
We're like a little nonprofit on Kingsborough's campus. And with the help of Kingsborough, we're able to provide this comprehensive programming. And the other programs do it in their own way. They're, you know, brick and mortar nonprofits. But there are no other year-long programs out there. There are, you know, it doesn't exist because it's costly and it's comprehensive, but this, you know, these are the kinds of things. So ideally, if I were to see this continue, maybe not a full year of programming, but at least 6 months where I get to know people,
mm-hmm.
and then another 6 months of, okay, we're following up with you, we're following up with you, we're watching you, where are you going, are you going, you know.
Right.
You can't have someone be disconnected for 3, 5, 8 years and imagine that in a 3-month training program, life is going to get perfect.
Right, as the young lady said, they're still working to overcome some of the challenges that they're working through. And that number is astounding to me. Tell our listeners again.
350,000 disconnected young adult in the New York City metro area.
And that's for various reasons.
All different reasons.
Family issues.
You name it.
LGBTQ youth that
Absolutely.
Are being disconnected. Poverty. Learning disabilities that are maybe not being identified.
That's a lot of the time that's the case. I can tell you that what people are probably imagining our cohorts, what our students look like,
mm-hmm.
you're imagining wrong. It's been every race, every background, every color, every creed, even various economic
mm-hmm.
Backgrounds. It's not just, you know, if you're singling in young, you know, African-American female women or Latino-American women, that's not what it is. I've seen the gamut.
Mm-hmm. Right, because we talked earlier that
mm-hmm.
our economy has also contributed to such a widespread issue of being derailed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So on that note, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to read our trivia question. And if you are the first person to correctly answer the trivia question and post it to my Facebook page, you will win a nice little Project Rise goodie bag filled with some nice things that I might let you have. There isn't one for me. Is there one for me?
If you would like.
Okay.
We'll definitely make it.
All right, then there'll be one available for you too. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM, Women in the Making, and we will be back.
And since we all came from a woman, got our name from a woman, and our game from a woman, I wonder why we take from our women, why we rape our women. Do we hate our women? I think it's time we kill for our women, heal our women, be real to our women. Cause if we don't, we'll have a race of babies that'll hate the ladies that make the babies. And since a man can't make one, he has no right to tell a woman when and where to create one. So will the real men get up? I know you fed up, ladies, but keep your head up.
Welcome back. This is Desi K. Robinson here on Women in the Making, Tomorrow's History Today, where we highlight the views, perspective, questions, goals, and accomplishments of today's girl. I've introduced you to some very lovely young ladies, Maxine and Erica from the Project Rise program, who were specifically picked by Ms. Dina Lamandri, who's the associate director, as some shining lights in the program. And I'm so proud to have them on my show to be able to talk about the challenges and also the triumphs of being able to just get here. Just having made your way to this program already speaks volumes about your ability to succeed. And so congratulations to you for being here today. And thank you for being here today. I want you to read, Miss Erica, the trivia question. If you are the first person to post the answer to the Women in the Making fan page at facebook.com/DesiKWim, you will win a goodie bag with Project Rise yummies inside. Ready?
All right, here it is.
Mm-hmm.
Kingsborough was recently named one of the top community colleges in the nation by Aspen Institute. What is its ranking nationwide? I'm gonna read it again.
Please.
Kingsborough was recently named one of the top community colleges in the nation by the Aspen Institute. What is its ranking nationwide?
Okay, so we need you to post the ranking of Kingsborough Community College within the Aspen ranking system. What is it, the Aspen Institute?
Yes.
Right, okay. So what is the ranking of Kingsborough Community College? Post that answer to the Women in the Making fan page. Be the first person to do that, and you will win a goodie bag from Project Rise with lots of yummy things inside. So I want to, as we come to a close here, we've touched on so many things. We won't be able to fully dig into all of the challenges that our young people are facing in this day and age. I will say that one of the things that were very uplifting and I was feeling really optimistic about was when I saw some of the protests around the nation. It is young people. It's, some of them are, old school cats that are used to, this kind, trying to affect change in this way. But many young people, many people from varying backgrounds that really have seen what we all have seen and have felt compelled to come and speak up. And so that feels great to me. And so I'm optimistic. I do believe in the spirit of young people. And I believe that one of the reasons that I do and I've created this show is because I believe in the power of young people and in the voice and in the perspective, particularly of our young women. And so I know that things can get better. I just believe that we have to be a global community that supports that effort. And so I want you ladies to talk a little bit about what some of the misconceptions have been of people who don't complete high school. What do you think some of the biggest misperceptions have been about you? And things that you can say, you know what, that's not who we are this.
One of them being is that we give up easily.
Mm-hmm.
Another saying that we're not bright and that we're lazy. We're not, we're hardworking. We gave up because we didn't believe in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents knew we could do it. Our teachers knew we could do it. We didn't feel like we could do it. All right? It's like, myself, I gave up on myself. My teachers knew. They said, you're not this person. You don't give up. You were the first one to come to school. You were the first one with a smile on everybody's faces. And I just told them, no. I know I'm bright. And I know I work hard. But I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I gave up on myself. I didn't give up on anybody else. I gave up on myself.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Maxine?
Well, I believe it's we're told we don't have a sense of direction.
Mm-hmm.
We lose it.
we have it as we, you know, we're kids. We all know what we want to be when we're kids coming up. And we just get lost along the way by everything that's going on in society, you know, media, and so much more at home. That plays a big effect on everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I just feel we just need to, you know, be guided more and, you know, have positive role models. That's what I should say, positive role models.
Mm-hmm. I think that's important. Those are, it's the same story, you know, we hear it again and again, but it really is important to position important, influential people in the lives of young people, you know? And when I say important and influential, I mean that in the widest definition possible, you know? I don't just mean famous, glossy people. I mean people who come from where you come from that are achieving success, you know? I grew up in the Bronx. I was born in Manhattan. I grew up in the Bronx, and it was so important for me to be able to go back to communities that I, you know, that I'm familiar with, for them to see that you can do it. It's possible, it's doable. You can come from the hood and you can achieve and you can go to school and it will be hard. And that's what makes it important, because nothing worth having is easily attained, you know? It does take some work, but how? And I think that's the important piece. What are the tools? How do we empower young people to sidestep the landmine when it does get hard? And so you young ladies are parents, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? And so what is your vision for yourself? What is your vision for your children? You have four children.
Yes.
Maxine, how old are they?
2, 5, 8, and 11.
Mm-hmm. And you're how old?
26.
26, okay. And what is your vision for Maxine, and what is your vision for those babies?
Well, I'm in college right now, a Kingsborough student.
Okay.
Going, you know, for my associates. I'm going for a court officer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for a career in the criminal justice field.
And you shall have it.
Thank you. For my children, they all know what they want to do, you know, when they get older. I'm just that positive role model there for them that I didn't have as a kid. And, you know, I always let them know, you know, when we're doing homework or whatever it is, you know, you have to get it wrong to get it right. That's the way I learned.
So, you have to get it wrong to get it right.
Yeah, okay. That's the way I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I tell them, don't give up if you get something wrong. You keep trying. And I'm always here about anything, you know. I'm here, come and talk. Communication is the key to success as well.
Mm-hmm. You're setting a new course for those babies. You are. Miss Erica, mm-hmm. You are a parent.
Yes.
How old?
She's 4.
Mm-hmm.
She's in pre-K right now.
Mm-hmm. And you are?
I'm 23.
23. And what is your vision for you? And what is your vision for that 4-year-old boy?
Girl.
Oh, girl. That's you said he. I'm
no,
sorry.
She, okay. She. Well, my vision for myself is, no matter what I did, no matter how I felt, I've always wanted to be a performer.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to combine performing with something else I love, cooking. So my main vision was to open up a dinner theater in New York, because you rarely see those. You see a theater, mm-hmm. You see restaurants.
Oh, my God. That's so old school.
I love dinner theater.
Okay.
And my vision for my daughter, because right now she's in a stage where she just wants to be a princess. I said, then you be the best princess you can possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
You keep going.
Make sure you teach her to save herself.
I do. I'd be like,
now
you just hold your virtue. I'd be like, you hold your virtue, you be
okay.
A princess.
Okay.
And we're Disney supporters.
Mm-hmm.
And we love them. And Disney once said, keep moving forward. So I put that in her. I'd be like, no matter how much you fail, because she will be doing her own homework and say, Mommy, I can't do it. I look down and I'd be like, keep moving forward. She's like, Mommy, it's not right. Keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. Mommy, I broke something. Keep moving forward. Because if you can't make a mistake and look at it and say, wow, this is the best mistake I've ever made, and it's going to get better and get better, and then she'll just succeed in it.
I have to tell you, I continue to feel optimistic, because not only are you affecting change in the lives of your children, you know, you are a role model to your peers as well, you know, and there will be people, believe me, the haters will hate.
Yes.
Hate is gonna hate, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But there are so many people that are, you know, feeling derailed and feeling hopeless. And, you know, and all it takes is one thing to throw you off, and that will put you into a chain of events that will really make you just feel overwhelmed. And so I think you guys are such great examples for younger people and also for your peers and even your parents and even an older generation of people that feel like maybe it's too late for them to know that you can always start over. You can always do it again. Would you agree, Dina?
Absolutely. Second chances, third chances. Before, you know, I've worked with young people for a long time, and before this I worked with people with developmental disabilities. And working with people with developmental disabilities teaches you that you can just keep trying something over and over and over again, and inches of success still matter.
Inches of success still matter. So before we wrap up, I want you to give some information about how people can get in touch with you or Project Rise if they're interested.
Sure. So there's a couple of different ways. We have our departmental webpage, which has a blog and highlights all of Project Rise's and our other programs and other training programs. It's CEWDKBCC.com.
One more time.
CEWDKBCC.com.
And that'll be posted on the Women in the Making fan page, so they can get it there.
Mm-hmm. Also, they can follow Project Rise Kingsboro at Project Rise KCC on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Instagram. The Project Rise Facebook, we post our recruitment flyer there. It goes to the Twitter accounts, and they can definitely check us there, or they can call to be put on a waiting list at 718-368-6600. We're taking people's names for a waiting list because we're hopeful that we'll get funding to continue our program the next year. And if we do, then we'll be able to continue to serve young people like these two courageous young ladies, which is what we're hoping for.
I hope so, too. I'm putting the best in the universe for you guys. I want not only just to be able to have this space for these 350,000, you know, disenfranchised, disillusioned, disconnected young people, but also to be able to cast that net really wide so that they get multiple kinds of support. And so I want to thank you so much. I totally appreciate you being here and sharing this information. Thank you, young ladies, Erica, Maxine, for sharing your personal stories. They were deeply, deeply personal, and I know that you are going to touch, if not one, but several lives, you know, sharing that story. I want to give a special shout out to Kingsborough Community College for allowing us to be here on site and on location, I'd like to call it. Give a special shout out to my community health worker cohorts at Kingsborough Community College. We are coming down to the end, and we had a really, really great semester, and I'm looking forward to seeing all of the great things that they're going to do to affect change in the communities that they're going to be working in. And you can get all the information that you need on the Women in the Making fan page. And so we're here at Women in the Making, WBAI 99.5 FM. And remember, let's make history her story as well. Take care.
A benefit concert for WBAI 99.5 FM, New York, hosted by Dalton Anderson of High Praise, Sunday mornings at 6 a.m. in association with J Blast Entertainment and Victory Christian Ministries, presents A Night of Inspiration on Saturday, December the 13th. Doors open at 3 p.m., showtime 5 p.m. at Pilgrim Church of Brownsville, 572 Rockaway Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. Starring David Wright in the New York Fellowship Mass Choir, Roberta Moore, Wanell Fuller, Riley Spuhl on Holy Sound, V. Renee Barnes, Mark Reddick, and Universal Praise, Anita Neely Wells, and Dr. Jill Maddox. For tickets, you can visit our website, give2wbai.org. Tickets are $20 in advance, $25 at the door, $30 VIP, and $35 VIP meet and greet. For additional information, you can also call 610-541-8615. A Night of Inspiration, a benefit concert for WBAI, Saturday, December the 13th, at Pilgrim Church of Brownsville, 572 Rockaway Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. Doors open at 3 p.m. showtime at 5 p.m. and I will be your MC.
And the previous program was Women in the Making, hosted by Desi K. Robinson. And this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. This is a listener-sponsored community radio station providing you a Pacifica state of mind since 1960. Stay tuned for Sojourner Truth with Mark.